This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In the case of President-elect Barack Obama, the term African-American is precisely accurate, but a subject of controversy nevertheless. While his father is from Kenya and his mother from Kansas, he said plainly that, given his looks, people treat him as a black man and that he sees himself as African-American. Yet some argue that's a misrepresentation, that he's biracial and does not do enough to acknowledge the fact. Still others say, leave the man alone and let him identify himself however he wants to. Does it matter what Barack Obama calls himself? Why? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the program, Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson on the issues that arise as relatives and sons and daughters and their girlfriends and boyfriends arrive to stay over during the holidays. If who sleeps where has been an issue in your family, send us an email now. The address again is talk@npr.org. But first, the politics of biracial. We begin with Dawn Turner Trice, who joins us from a studio in Chicago. She's a columnist there and covers race relations for the Chicago Tribune. And nice to talk to you again.
Hello.
And I know this has been discussed on your website. Is the reaction, at least in part, an issue of how people identify themselves?
Absolutely. This has been one of the questions that we have dealt with throughout the time of talking about race on Exploring Race. Readers really want to know why, white readers want to know why Barack Obama, the president-elect, doesn't call himself biracial. And he has said, and we in the newspaper often identify him as African-American because that's the way he identifies himself. But this is such a complex issue that it goes beyond skin color and how the person views himself or herself. It also deals with how families operate. Biracial kids who live in who are socialized in white suburbs may call themselves something differently. A biracial person who's raised by, let's say, a white mom and a white stepdad might identify differently. And so would a biracial kid who's growing up with a single black mom, maybe, who's growing up in a black community. So it's very complicated.
One part of it is from biracial people who say, wait a minute, he's like me. Why doesn't he call himself biracial?
Absolutely. And you hear some people who say that part of this has to deal with politics, that in order to win over the black community, I mean, this is something that has a historical influence. And the black community is, some members of the black community, a little sensitive about how biracial people identify themselves if one of the parents was black.
So this is important to, you know, and it has been. We're going to discuss the history in a moment, but this is really important to some people, even though this has been seen as a triumph of his election, has been seen as a triumph for African Americans.
Well, that's true. And it's also been, there are a lot of people, though, who have embraced Barack Obama, and a lot of white people who might who want a part of this, who want a part of him, let's put it that way, as well. And it's an interesting dynamic because we've seen in the past how as I just said, black people who want biracial people to identify with black culture, but I've never seen the case in which you have a person who really with brown skin who has a black parent and a white parent, you have a lot of white people who have said, I should say, who have written to me, and they've used words like they feel insulted that Barack Obama does not identify as biracial, or they feel like he's alienating a group of people. And so they use these kind of emotional, impassioned words. So it's not just the actual, the reality that he is mixed race, but it's kind of like that they have hurt feelings that he does not, and they say, acknowledge his white ancestry.
Dawn Turner Trice of the Chicago Tribune. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Email us, talk@npr.org. Dave is with us calling from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hello. Just about me very quickly. I have biracial descendants. I date across races. It's not really an issue for me. And when it comes to race, biologically, it's quite insignificant. Culturally, though, we must respect and honor those of other cultures and the heritage that they cling to and come from. There's probably one thing that bothered me the most about race in this election, and that came from the race speech. And I read it. I didn't get to see it all, but I read the transcript. And if you read it, you'll find some interesting things. Two things he said. That he is more or less the embodiment of the American melting pot, I paraphrase.
Mm-hmm. This is the speech he gave after the Jeremiah Wright incident.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And the other one was, and it follows this, he said, now, again, I paraphrase, but I don't exaggerate, that unless you vote for me and in this election, America will forever be trapped in racism and with a lack of a sense of justice. Justice cannot prevail. And I was kind of insulted by that. But it's there if you read it. It's certainly there.
Why were you insulted by it?
Well, because I don't need to elect him to be free of racism, or neither does the country. I do think it'll have two effects. It'll be both polarizing and unifying. And I welcome the outcome, even though I'm a Republican. I would have preferred another outcome. But for the sake of the effect on race relations, I think it's a great thing, but I'm a little bothered that he would be so presumptuous to say, I'm America's last chance to overcome racism. Hmm. And it's in his speech. Yeah, I suggest that you read it.
All right, Dave. Thanks very much. Did you read the speech that way, Don Turner Trice?
Well, I heard it, and I don't recall... I don't recall that, but I think that it's important to note that it's not the race was not about, at least I didn't see the election about being, you know, this kind of this in totality a referendum on race. But it was interesting to see the coalitions that had to be built in order for him to win. As I recall, it was, I believe, 67% of the Hispanic vote, over 90% of the black vote, 63% of the Asian vote, and then it was 44% of the white vote. And it was just really, it was interesting, especially with the U.S. Census Bureau saying that by 2042, the country is going to be a majority minority in terms of race country, that in order for him, it makes sense that you can now build this type of coalition. But you also have to have a candidate that's a little different, and I think that you had those two things that came together.
As Don Turner Trice has suggested, this has a long historical background. Joining us now from our bureau in New York, Annette Gordon-Reed, a professor of law at New York Law School, a history professor at Rutgers, and also the author of The Hemingses of Monticello, An American Family. Since we've last spoken to her on this program, that book won the National Book Award. Nice to have you back on the program, and congratulations.
Nice to be here, and thank you very much.
And remind us, this, as you wrote about in that book, this goes back to shortly after the arrival of slaves in America.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that I find fascinating about this whole discussion. It's as if Barack Obama represents some new thing, that he's the first interracial person who's been in America, and that black people from slavery time have not had to negotiate this thing of having a white parent and a black parent. There have been millions of people like that. And it's sort of an interesting question to define that. I mean, at what point do you cease to be biracial? Are his children biracial? Will their children be biracial? Is it just having one parent or of one race and one of another one? So this is, black people have grappled with this for 200 years.
And there were varying definitions at varying times.
Exactly. Mulatto, we went through this whole thing with mulatto, quadroon, octoroon. People decided race based upon fractions. You know, if you were 7/8 white, you were considered white in Virginia. And then we went to a sort of a one drop rule. So it's never
been a
static
thing. In
other words,
if you had one drop of black blood,
exactly.
You were black.
You were black. And so this has been all over the map, and black people have had to deal with this, not people who've been running for president from the beginning of our time here. So it's quite strange, sort of illuminating, I think, to have this conversation.
And in fact, other biracial politicians have had it. We think of African-Americans or black people only running for office really since, I guess, the 1960s for the most part, but during Reconstruction, after the Civil War.
Absolutely. The first black governor, P.B.S. Pinchback, who was, by, I guess, the racial classifications of the day, a quadroon, who was mixed race, and many of the people who were in Reconstruction legislatures and so forth were people of mixed race, not by no means all of them, but certainly they were a part of that. So It's new for the modern era, but it is something that has historical roots.
And did those politicians identify themselves as quadroons or as biracial?
Well, they were identified that way by other people, but they were certainly treated as people of African descent, and any African descent determined the way people viewed you. So they got certainly no legal privileges from that, perhaps social privileges, but you know, the thing for most black politicians, even people like Adam Clayton Powell in the modern era, was to emphasize their blackness and their solidarity with the black community, because that's indeed how they were treated.
And that is indeed how Barack Obama says he is treated by most people, and that's why he identifies with the African-American community, too.
Well, it's not surprising at all. You look at those photos of him in Time magazine, and he could look like one of my brothers or cousins. You would never think that there was anything special, you know, about his background or that he actually had a white parent.
And another curiosity is that DNA studies, and again, this is a technology just available to us over the last few years, they suggest that indeed the vast majority of African-Americans, black Americans in this country are indeed of mixed race.
Absolutely. So that's what makes it odd. Why all of a sudden is it if you have one white parent, you're a biracial, but you sort of deny the sort of multiracial heritage of the vast majority of African Americans? It's only if you have a white parent does that quote-unquote count. It's fascinating.
And indeed, we're going to talk about it some more with Annette Gordon-Reed, a historian, and also with Dawn Turner-Trice of the Chicago Tribune. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation that's underway at our website. Just go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. In any case, stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the politics of biracial today. President-elect Obama, of course, self-identifies as African-American. There are those who argue he should embrace a biracial identity. Does it matter what Barack Obama calls himself or other biracial people? Why or why not? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website, npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Our guests are Dawn Turner-Trice, who writes about race for the Chicago Tribune, and Annette Gordon-Reed, professor of history at Rutgers and author of the book The Hemingses of Monticello, An American Family. Let's get some more callers on the line. This is Pamela. Pamela calling us from Melbourne, Pennsylvania.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment in the fact that if it didn't matter, it wouldn't matter, but it matters because I know it sounds weird, but I'm white. My husband is black. I obviously have mixed-race kids. And when my one daughter was born in the hospital, those silly little boxes you have to fill out, there was nothing for her. And I had to make this huge argument, like, you know, no, she's not African-American and she's not white. If you want me to categorize her, then you need to give me a category. And I love Barack Obama. I would support him 100%, but I am definitely insulted or a little bit hurt that he does not call himself mixed, because if my kids didn't call themselves biracial, they would be excluding my whole side of them. It's interesting because one of my daughters looks much more African-American and the other one looks much more like me, Caucasian. And, you know, the one that looks less African-American said, why doesn't Barack Obama, she's 10, she said, why doesn't Barack Obama, why does he say he's black, Mommy? Why does he say he's African-American? Isn't he like me? And I'm like, and I had to explain to them. And I don't know, I just think he should have embraced it. I think he should have embraced, and all the mixed-race kids that have to deal with being mixed-race, you know, he could have helped them all out.
Yet he certainly didn't try to hide it, all those campaign films and at the convention showing pictures of his mother and indeed that he was raised by a white grandmother.
No, he didn't try to hide it, you're right, except that when my kids are in school and they get asked what they are, they say mixed, and they don't understand why he says, I'm African American.
And Dawn Turner Trice, I think there lies the rub.
Absolutely. Michelle Hughes, a Chicago adoption attorney, wrote a wonderful essay for us on exploring race. And the title, well, she dealt with the subtle and not so subtle difference between being biracial and black with a white mom. And
right.
And there's a distinction there. And I guess one of the things our culture is still one in which you can identify yourself, and then society will also identify you. And so you'll have there may be a difference there between those two definitions. And I think a lot of it is based on how you look. And one of the things that Michelle said in her just wonderful essay was that, I mean, her mother is white and her father is black, and this kind of is a generational thing, because I think she does identify as biracial, and she also said she didn't want to pick one parent over the other, but she has fair skin, and depending on what community, if you know Chicago, we have our various ethnic communities, and she said depending on where she is around Chicago, I mean, if she's in Little Italy, she may be mistaken for an Italian American person.
Mm-hmm.
If she's in Pilsen, people may think she's Hispanic. If she's on the south side of Chicago, people may think she's a fair-skinned black person. So it kind of, she blends. It just depends on where she is.
How my one daughter is. She blends anywhere. Mm. She gets taken for everything that she's in.
And then she will identify herself, the way she wants to, and then she'll have to explain to people who will look at her, and then they'll identify her.
Pamela's comment reminds me of this email we got from Deanne in Lawrence, Kansas. It's life on a tightrope, stepping through a minefield, damned if you do, damned if you don't. With a Native American father and a white mother, I've been there, but it's a little better these days, and it's great to be able to check more than one box. And Annette Gordon-Reed, there are a lot more boxes on those forms nowadays, but that's not the way a lot of people see it.
Well, that's the difficulty, as Dawn was saying, is that there's how you identify yourself and how society views you. And people often say race is a social construct, and it is a social construct, but it's a very, very powerful one. Mm-hmm. And you can't act as if it doesn't have reality or have any meaning in people's lives.
Take it right there. You can't act as though it doesn't have reality, because it does. And interesting that you talk about those boxes, because still, my kids still, like when they take standardized tests and they're little, there's an other box instead of a mixed race box. And my one daughter, who's just a precocious, bright little girl, she's like, oh, am I other? I mean, what does other mean to a little kid?
So I would ask a question. If when your daughter has a daughter, what are they still mixed race? I mean, at what point? Remember, we were discussing before about many African Americans, most African Americans have white ancestry. Many of them have white ancestry. Are they mixed race too?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I explain to my kids that we're all mixed race, that even though I don't look it, that I'm mixed just like they are. We just have different, as my mother-in-law said when my one daughter was born, you stirred her up fine, which I thought was great. I don't know. I guess it would depend on if they married black or white. I hate to say it. I'm not really sure. It's a great question.
What's also interesting in this is that you can have two black parents, and this is what my mother told me years ago, was that, you never know. You may have a very fair-skinned child, and she was talking to her daughters. You may have a very dark-skinned child, and the genetic pool is such that even when you have parents of the same race, it can be kind of a crapshoot. As I have a very fair-skinned child I'm brown. My husband's a little lighter, but people are always asking her if she's mixed race. And technically, I guess, depending on how you define it, she's not.
She probably,
and that's why. And I suppose that one reason
is that when my daughter was little, she referred to people as tan and brown. She didn't understand the race thing.
Yeah.
And my mother-in-law is fair-skinned, and my father-in-law is very, very dark. And she would always call Nana tan and Peepaw brown skin. And it's only till she's older, she asked me, she said, wait, is Nana black or is she white?
Hmm.
And she was black, she was just fair. So it's a fascinating issue that I've certainly gotten my education in.
Well, Dawn's article raises an interesting point about the definition of blackness. And one of the reasons, and this is why it's such a touchy subject for black Americans, is that blackness is defined negatively. Mm-hmm. And people don't, there's a sense that you don't want to be black, or people may not want to be black because the sort of history of white supremacy has devalued blackness in a way that people want to be something other. I mean, if it were about not being white, I mean, whiteness isn't the problem. The problem is the blackness. And yes. So that enters into it as well.
Pamela, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go now to Taya. Taya is in Dedham, Massachusetts.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good, good. I am African American, Native American, Filipino, Chinese, German, Danish, and I grew up in Japan. I am a performer, a producer, and a college professor. I specialize in multiracial issues. My last documentary, Crossing the Line, Multiracial Comedians, is on PBS. And Dr. Reginald Daniels, who was quoted earlier, is actually in the documentary, and we talk quite a bit about what is race and what is biracial, what is multiracial. My perspective is actually that we should eliminate racial categories.
And let me turn to Annette Gordon-Reed, and it's a fine aspiration. Do you think it's likely to happen anytime soon?
No, certainly. And then you end up with France, where there is no racial categorization, and they deny that there's any racial problem. And there are very, very few black people participating at the upper echelons of society because they don't recognize. They say by not recognizing it, as long as white supremacy is in play, it sounds good. But what we know will happen is that people of color will suffer because of that ultimately.
Interesting.
People who are not identified.
A similar dynamic in Brazil as well.
Exactly. Right. I mean, there is no race problem in Brazil because they say there's no race problem because they deny the existence of race. And yet all the blacks are on the bottom and the whites are on the top.
But do you not believe that if we continue using racial categories the way we do, it is only going to perpetuate the concept of race, which is how we define and segregate each other anyway. I mean, it only goes to show that any caller who calls in who is biracial or multiracial or who has kids who are mixed, it's the kids who can't define themselves. So when they do look at someone like Obama, it is very clear that racial categories as they exist today is problematic. And certainly I do agree that there is racism. There's racism all over the world. And there are places that have eliminated racial categories. There are some who haven't. But the question is, not so much, is there racism? The question is, because race is a social construct, it's a political construct.
Well, you can
rid of racial categories. Could that not be a move toward understanding who we are inside?
Well, it could, or it could be a way of solidifying a problem that we've not dealt with. And I think Dawn's article deals with this: is the sort of notion of blackness as this negative thing, and as a problem. And instead of, I mean, we certainly have. You know, this is a country that's very, very much into racial categorizations, but we've elected a black president. And other places that are groovy.
A multiracial president.
Well,
And a multicultural president.
A multicultural president, but we have elected someone who probably could not be elected at any of these places that don't have racial categorizations because they don't deal forthrightly. There's nothing wrong with being different.
And interestingly, in Europe, he is routinely referred to as biracial.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Taya, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Lisa. Lisa with us from Dublin in California.
Hi there. Yes, I wanted to propose to your historian. I definitely agree wholeheartedly with what she's saying. Although I'm from Puerto Rico. I grew up in Puerto Rico. And what she was saying about the Southerners and the different categories of blackness. And in Puerto Rico, we don't have the issue of we have just, you know, one category. You're Puerto Rican, and you have black. You are black. You have a drop of black no matter what. And because you're African-American, you're Indian, and you're Spanish from Spain. You know, you have black, you're Spaniard from Spain. And so that's what Puerto Rico means, a Puerto Rican. And then you're called Moreno, which means light black, Trigueño. There's different degrees of on the scale of blackness. Now, I look lighter. So when I come here to the States, people look and they look at me and they say, "Oh, you're Puerto Rican. Oh, you don't look Puerto Rican." And so I say, "So what's a Puerto Rican supposed to look like?" However, when Obama said, "Oh, you know, is denying his or not denying, but just not bringing it out his biracial identity," it does bother me a little bit because of the fact when I, you know, my identity too. I acknowledge my identity. I'm everything, you know, even though I don't look it, I'm everything. And I'm also half Italian. And my kids are also multiracial, multi-ethnic, because I'm also married to a Korean. So I want to bring it all out on the table, even if I don't look it. I was wondering if your historian had a comment.
Let's
on
hear from
that
Annette Gordon-Reed then. Okay?
Well, it's just fascinating to me because, you know, if this is his chosen identity because of there are his experiences in life. I'm trying to think of an analogy. If a person, you know, chose to be had a Jewish parent or a Christian parent and chose one culture over another, you know, would people feel that he had done something wrong or he couldn't do that? I mean, this is a part of his identity, the way he has been treated in the world. And it seems to me that it's sort of an odd notion to do away with race by emphasizing biracialism instead of people choosing their own path in
self-identity, life. Self-identity, yeah. Lisa, thanks very much. We're talking with Dawn Turner-Trice and Annette Gordon-Reed about the politics of biracial. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Dawn Turner-Trice, I heard you trying to get in.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm fascinated by the number of people who want to do away with the racial categories, and the people who write to me and say that, you know, well, why are you talking about race? If you stop talking about it, it will go away. And I find that line of thinking just it's amazing because it will not go away because we are different. We're of different ethnicities and we're of different skin tones. And in this country, those things matter. And one of the things that that we often don't talk about when we're talking about race is just how subjective a lot of our thinking about race is. And I've seen so many studies just how it, and I know that Annette Gordon-Reed deals with this in her wonderful book. And it talked about the different, the context, when you talk about black, what does that mean? The negative connotations that are stirred up compared to whiteness and just how, you know, how wonderful it is. I mean, that the color is and on all of that, and how we often don't really tap into some of the things that we think about race and feel about race that are on a very subjective, on a level that we may not even know, a level of consciousness we may not even be attuned to.
Let's end with this email from Reginald Concord, North Carolina, concerning the one drop theory. Halle Berry also has a white mother, yet when she won the Oscar for Best Actress a couple of years ago, no one asserted her biraciality, but instead lauded her as the first black actress to win the award. Why is it that just a couple of years ago Halle Berry was fully black, but now President-elect Obama is half white? Could it be those whites who are asserting this are fully accepting of blacks in entertainment and sports, but in national politics are not as accepting of blackness? And I guess that's it's another point, Annette Gordon-Reed.
Well, that's, again, back to Dawn's article, this idea that, I mean, Obama embodies, he's sort of the opposite of all of the stereotypes about blackness. And so when he identifies himself as a black man, he's telling a different story of what blackness means. And I think some people have difficulty with that. He is, you know, a Harvard graduate. He is he's the president-elect. This is not what a black man is supposed to be under the conventional narrative. And so he upsets a lot of categories, I think. I think it's wonderful that he identifies himself as a black man and explodes a lot of the myths about what it means to be black.
And reminds us all to start this conversation all over again almost every day, Dawn Turner-Trice.
Well, and absolutely. And clearly, if he were a ne'er-do-well, I'm not certain people of either community would want to claim him as much. But because he is this extraordinary, he's got this extraordinary pedigree and this background that I think a lot of people want a piece of him.
The other part of that, just in response to that email, of course, the shortstop for the Yankees, Derek Jeter, a very prominent biracial his parents are often in the stands every single game, so there's no getting around that. But anyway, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thanks to you both.
Thank you for having me.
Dawn Turner Trice, a columnist who covers race relations at the Chicago Tribune, with us from Bosco Productions in Chicago today. And Annette Gordon-Reed, a professor of law at New York Law School, also a history professor of Rutgers and the author of the National Book Award-winning book, The Hemingses of Monticello and American Family, with us from our bureau in New York. Up next, home for the holidays, grandparents, kids, significant others, ask Amy's Amy Dickinson on the sometimes tricky question of sleeping arrangements. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.